Music you've been hearing tonight is from a CD called Vintage Chicago Blues. Pick it up. Swastika Nation may not have the ring of your perfect Christmas gift, but this is something that should be wrapped and put under the tree of anyone. There's a Chicago connection here, isn't there, author Ernie Bernstein? And it goes back to Skokie in about 1977.
That was my high school years, actually. It was the Nazi march in Skokie. I was there the day those goons were supposed to be coming in. And
right.
Everybody was waiting for them.
Well, what that did was kind of re-energize the many Holocaust survivors who had moved to Skokie to never speak of things again.
Yeah.
And for you, what did it resurrect then? You're a high school kid.
It got me interested in what are these people about and the history of Nazism in America. It was here. It got me interested in, and I've always had kind of a passing interest in it.
What you've done in this book, and I remember my dad talking about the Bund. The full title of this book is Swastika Nation, Fritz Kuhn and the Rise and Fall of the German-American Bund. The book starts with a bang on February 20th, 1939, and the bang is so, I think, dramatic that people picking up this book knowing nothing about the Bund will think, wait a minute, Arnie Bernstein made this up. This could not have happened in America. What happened that night?
I could not have come up with a better fictional plot, but it's all real.
No, but your plotting is perfect here.
Thanks, yeah. Thanks. No, there were 20,000 American Nazis packed into Madison Square Garden to listen to this popinjay of a dictator, is fat, thick in many different ways. Nazi leader Fritz Kuhn, known as the Bundesführer, who is speaking to this crowd of Nazis, and outside were 100,000 people waiting to kill him.
It's an astonishing beginning, and you cannot pervert in the proverbial way. You won't be able to put the book down, especially with Arnie is such a great writer, and I've seen him grow up as a writer too.
Thanks.
And as a stylist over the years. He says this, and this is great, with great understatement. Kuhn had come a long way to this moment of glory. It is a long, weird road that got him to Madison Square Garden in 1939.
Yeah.
What was it?
Well, he claimed he had followed Hitler into the beer hall putscht. He was German. Ended up fleeing Germany after being caught ripping off his employer. Went to Mexico, came up to Detroit, got working for Henry Ford. Got involved with something called the Friends of New Germany, which was a pro-Nazi movement here in the late 20s, early 30s, which he rose to the top of the Detroit branch and then the Midwestern branch when the Friends of New Germany was ordered shut down by the Germans, the Nazis were totally embarrassed by these movements.
That says a great deal.
Yeah, imagine being a Nazi so bad you embarrass Hitler. You know,
yeah, right.
He reformed the organization as the German-American Bund, and from 36 to 39, they had something of an impact, people.
What was their draw? What drew people to this?
You know, that's a darn good question. I wish I knew the answer.
Yeah.
There was a fascination. Certainly it was protection, you know, for German-Americans. Not all German-Americans, certainly. I don't want to cast away.
Oh, of course. Sure,
and
sure.
They were a loud minority, a very loud minority. And they had an enamoration. You know, they were enamored with Hitler.
And they
and the
came
Hitler movement.
From, you know, the disenfranchised.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
The people who, life is treating me unfair. And they found in this a voice of sorts, right?
Yeah. I mean, they got they suddenly had power. These were a lot of disaffected factory workers, unemployed people. And they put on their uniforms and they marched around and they sold
their
pamphlets.
Them a false. You know, but you understand that, Ernie Bernstein, so do I. It gave them a false sense of as false as we may think it is, it gave them a sense of purpose, didn't it?
Yeah. And, in fact, I just spoke last week with a woman who read my book. She grew up in Brooklyn and said that she remembers these guys marching in the streets below the apartment and her mother pushing her away. They were really frightened by these Nazis marching in the streets. They had their swastikas. They in essence, they looked like the Germans.
Kuhn, a character that the greatest fiction writers could not have invented, described by a representative of the disabled war veterans who was testifying in front of a Congress subcommittee the year before this rally at Madison Square Garden, said, in my opinion, Fritz Kuhn is a mixture of Charlie McCarthy and Dizzy Dean.
That's one way of describing him. He's the most improbable leader you can imagine. He was if he had been a leader of a corporation or something in the 1930s, he would have been a genius. He somehow marshaled this crazy movement that was falling apart and marshaled it and created their own businesses, their own publishing arms, managed to get a lot of people to listen to him. But he was, of course, it was Nazism. And there was a thing called the leadership principle. You did whatever the leader said. He was in charge of all the money, married with two kids. And, of course, you got that much money on your hands. Big, heavy guy, thick glasses, thick German accent, and a total chick magnet. Clark Gable or something. He had women falling out of the rafters.
That's an astonishing part of the book, yeah. Too. The book also has all manner of familiar characters in unusual roles.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to, after the break, we'll talk about how Meyer Lansky, big star of Boardwalk Empire now, gets involved in all this. And I also want you to talk, Arnie Bernstein, about Henry Ford, who I think people forget, and I think there are a lot of people who think, well, Henry Ford, he was some kind of wonderful genius. He may well have been some kind of mechanical genius, but the dark side of Henry Ford, and you have not an anecdote, you have a little story in here about is something that preceded his death. May have hastened his death that I really want to talk about. Arnie Bernstein has written a number of fine books about Chicago. This one is the book he's been looking for a long time. It's a big, I've always said to Arnie, you're going to hit on something. It's going to be more than Who Made Movies. Hollywood in Chicago is a great book. Another edition just came out. But you were looking for a big story, yeah. And you finally found it.
I found the story of a lifetime here.
It is Fritz Kuhn and the Rise and Fall of the German-American Bund. Swastika Nation is the name of the book. It may not sound like a, buoyant read, but the way Arnie writes, and he's really become quite the stylist now, I must say, it's a portrait of a time in this country that has been buried in history's dust and needs to. And I want to say this: it is a lively, fun read.
I know
it doesn't seem like it should be, but I should have played Springtime for Hitler at the beginning of this segment.
At times, I wasn't sure if I was writing drama or farce.
Yeah, I know this guy is such a goof, but a dangerous goof.
Oh yeah.
A dangerous goof. We'll proceed on after a short break with Arnie Bernstein. Again, the book Swastika Nation. The cast of characters beyond Kuhn will intrigue you beyond words.
Well, I can't quit you, babe. But
that's the last you'll be hearing of Vintage Chicago Blues, a great CD, nothing terribly special, no big stars, just a lot of stars gathered together. Arnie Bernstein is my guest until 11, then he can go home to his lovely wife, Cheryl, who usually comes in, and I'm like, wait, where's your wife? The only reason I ever put you on is your
I didn't think you were going to let me on tonight.
Henry Ford, Arnie Bernstein,
is a
player in this book, and that story has not been told enough.
Fritz Kuhn actually worked for Ford.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't surprise me after what I learned here.
A lot of the guys, actually, who were involved in the Friends of New Germany and the German-American Bund worked for Ford. That's where a lot of them met, working for Ford. There's some belief and no proof that Ford may have financed them. Mm-hmm. There was a lawyer from New York and the New York Times contacted Ford and said, why is this Fritz Kuhn on your payroll? This was well after Kuhn had left Ford and was now a national figure.
Yeah.
Why is he on your payroll? They sent back a very generic letter saying that our employees have every right to speak their mind and we don't make any judgment whatsoever, blah, blah, blah. And about a month later, Kuhn officially resigned, although he hadn't been working at the company in months.
Yeah. And there's a pile of proof that that certainly Ford's sympathies were anti-Semitic.
Oh,
no,
most assuredly.
No question of that.
Most assuredly.
You write in the book, and now that Arnie's style has gotten so snappy, I'm going to read a couple paragraphs. Yes. In May 1946, the United States government created the documentary Death Stations, an aptly titled movie using footage shot in Nazi concentration camps. A private screening was arranged for Ford and his top executives. Unflinching images of Hitler's final solution bombarded the audience for one solid hour. The film ended. Auditorium lights were turned on for an audience drained by the depravity. Then, some more drama. Henry Ford was collapsed in his seat. Sometime during the screening, he had a massive stroke. 11 months later, Henry Ford was dead. Not saying the guy deserved it, but he obviously saw some things in that that film.
Well, Hitler kept a picture of Ford in his office. He mentioned Ford in Mein Kampf. He gave Ford a medal that Ford never returned.
Yeah, Lindbergh, too.
Yeah, right? Lindbergh, too.
This book is so neatly researched and neatly written that it's a terrific read. It's popular history, and by that I mean not academic history. It's popular history in the way Simon Winchester writes popular history. There are so many unlikely heroes too this book. I mentioned Meyer Lansky, another mobster, Mickey Cohn, right.
Jack Ruby
makes an appearance
up, all
here.
In the Warren Report. Well, a lot of people came to the gangsters, rabbis, judges on the sly, said, "Can you do something about these guys? You know, they were bad guys, but you know, I compare them to the Golem, the ancient Jewish legend about the man of clay who's frightening, but." Protects his people. And that's sort of what they were. They would not accept money for it. The Italians came to him. Luciano said, "Can we help you?" They said, "No, this is our fight." Civilians wanted to get involved. Mob never took civilians, but Bugsy Siegel trained them.
Yeah.
And they did their damnedest.
How dangerous, Arnie Bernstein, do you think these characters really were?
At the end of the day, they made a lot of noise. And I think that was the biggest thing, was that they made a lot of noise. But they were scary. They did scare people. You know, I mean, Nazis walking down the street. And, you know, you have to remember that during this time, too, there was a lot of anti-Semitism, the gentlemen's agreements.
No question.
That were going on in the country.
I think one of the other aspects of the book is, and in this, especially in this guy, Fritz Kuhn, it shows how, in bad times, how easily malleable the public can be. I mean, it happened in Germany, certainly.
Oh, yeah.
Hitler a little more persuasive than this goof. But how even a goof can marshal an army of sorts.
He's the most improbable leader you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
And yet he did it.
Yeah.
And totally forgotten to this day.
How did you come upon this?
Just started looking around. I saw Inglourious Bastards, and I got really intrigued by the story.
Millions of people saw Inglourious Bastards, and you're the guy who found this out of it.
Well, I started looking at stories of Jews who went hunting Nazis during the Hitler era, just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
And then I stumbled on this, and I said, I think I got a book here. And one thing led to another.
How difficult was it to sell? Because this is a bizarre age for book publishing.
You know, It took me about a year to write the proposal. Then we started sending it out. Took about 5 months. My editor is from Germany, and she got right away what I was after.
Really?
God, Danielle is great. And she knew what – she helped me a lot. She knew what was going on. And
were there any similar – tell me about similar movements in other countries that resembled this and why the United States was so nurturing.
Well, we're a larger country. We're a more open society, and we have the First Amendment, and you're allowed to be obnoxious in this country. You have the freedom to be obnoxious in this country. That's how they got them. They could not get them on First Amendment. And ultimately, they got them because Kuhn was spending all the money on girlfriends. They got him on embezzlement, and that more or less killed the group.
Amazing. I mean, I'm not kidding you, ladies and gentlemen. It's an amazing tale. I knew a bit about the German-American Bund and some of their activities, but Kuhn, as the head clown here, basically, is a compelling goof.
Oh, yeah, and he and Walter Winchell and their very public fight.
Yeah, talk about that a little.
Well,
Winchell, of course, the most important gossip columnist of the day.
Yeah, but Winchell caught on early to these guys and to Hitler. And
he didn't always.
He roasted them left and right.
Yeah.
I mean, what the names that he called Kuhn. Let's see. Here they are. He just called Kuhn dog. Fritz Kuhn, Kuhn Nazi, the Shame American, the local anesthetic.
The Shame American.
Yeah. Fritz Confucius, son of a Fritz, the Beef Bundant, chief of the Ratsies. He just had the time of his life. And then there was an incident where Kuhn was out on the town with his girlfriend and dead drunk in the Stork Club. which was Winchell's hangout. And the two of them locked eyes, and Kuhn split. And Winchell, who carried a gun with him after a couple of Nazis tried to beat him up outside of his barber, he carried a gun with him after that, went into the bathroom and took out the bullets because he didn't trust himself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. These are the kind of stories that are in Swastika Nation, Fritz Kuhn and the Rise and Fall of the German-American Bund. Paperback coming out one of these days?
Paperback in about a year.
That's great. Sell the rights. That's good. That's good.
St. Martin's. It's published by St. Martin's.
That's great.
And if you want to, I'll be at University of Chicago on the 23rd at the Coop, on October 23rd at the Coop at 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
People want to come out.
Where else?
Galway. I'll be at the bookstall in November.
Do you have your own website?
I have my own website, yeah.
What is it? Give it to people.
ArnieBernstein.com. Easy enough to find. And
you can get your other books, too, because Arnie has a real bookshelf of Chicago books, A Hollywood on Lake Michigan,
New
Edition.
Yeah, just came out, second edition.
New Edition just came out, with Michael Corcoran.
Bath Massacre is still out there.
Oh, yeah.
Doing quite well still.
That's good.
I was just up there last week.
Well, you've hit the big time here, pal.
Well, thanks.
St. Martin's is a great press. I think this, if there's some creative screenwriter out there and you could get the right kind of guy to play Fritz Kuhn, you'd really have something.
Oh, I see Paul Giamatti in the role. I think that's great.
Yeah, well, you're right. Well, there can't be many people, and he's still alive, who were grown-ups at this time. But what's been the reaction from people who knew of this? They must be... Proud of you.
Yeah, it's been a very good reaction, actually. I spoke with a woman last week who grew up in Brooklyn with this. My dad remembers these guys when he was a kid in that
time. Marching down the streets.
Yeah, my dad remembers these people.
See, this is why, even for people, I mean, the people who tasted of that horrific regime in Germany, who, when they came here, when you were a boy, and they were many of them living in Skokie, just the sight of these uniforms resurrected all of that memory and all of that fear.
Yeah. In a way, this book was kind of fun to write because people had forgotten these people. I resurrected them just so I could beat them down, and that was part of the fun.
You did a great job.
Thanks.
As you might, there are very few books that contain Henry Ford, Meyer Lansky, Jack Ruby, and Fritz Kuhn, and Walter Winchell. None that I really know of. Arnie Bernstein, it's been an ongoing pleasure to watch your career.
Thanks.
And this is, you're going to have a tough time topping this one, pal. I'll tell you.
I'm working on it.
I'll tell you. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Thanks
love to your wife, too. Cheryl's the greatest. I missed her in here. Next time.
Next time.
Next time.